Hi, everyone, and welcome to Food Disruptors, an IFT podcast that brings you the latest insights and perspectives from some of the brightest minds in the science of food. Each episode, our guests discuss the ever-changing intersection of entrepreneurship, innovation, and science, and their role in advancing the global food system. This episode is sponsored by the IFT Muscle Food Division, and it will focus on the economic impact of African swine fever. Joining us today is Daryl Peel. He is the Charles Breedlove Professor of Agribusiness in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Oklahoma State University. He served as the Extension Livestock Marketing Specialist since 1989, and he works in the area of international livestock and meat trade with a focus on Mexico and Canada and the North American livestock and meat industry. Welcome, Daryl.
Good afternoon.
So for those of us that maybe aren't that familiar with ASF, could you give us a brief refresher of what ASF actually is?
Sure. African swine fever is a highly contagious, very severe swine disease. It is swine specific. It affects both domestic and wild swine populations. It occurs in many parts of the world, obviously in Africa, but also Central and Eastern Europe. And more recently has really had a big impact in Asia, and those are major pork-producing areas. So this disease is particularly challenging for a number of reasons. One is that it does not have a vaccine. It's a very difficult disease to deal with. It's a very durable virus, which is easily spread by any muscle tissue or any animal tissue, really, from a diseased animal or any fluids. It can travel in feed. It can travel on other articles, so fomites, which is the name for, people, clothes, whatever. Finally, it's an extremely fatal disease with a very high mortality rate for these hogs.
So in short, I mean, it kind of sounds like bad news for the pork industry. How is it currently affecting the U.S. pork industry?
Well, the good news, certainly is that we do not have ASF in the U.S. or indeed anywhere in the Western Hemisphere right now. There have been some cases in the past in South America that were eradicated, so it doesn't exist. And obviously, the industry is working very diligently along with the federal government and other agencies to try to keep it from coming here. So we don't have the disease to deal with from a veterinary standpoint, but obviously, it's having major economic impacts in all pork markets and indeed all protein markets around the world.
Yeah, and I think we'll dig into, some of the details there a little bit later on. But, in terms of the U.S. pork industry, just to give people a little bit of perspective, pork prices in the U.S., has ASF impacted pork prices? Do you foresee it impacting pork prices in the future?
It definitely will have an impact. I think we're just beginning to see those impacts. And so, if we kind of look at where we've been in the pork industry, production and price-wise in general, in 2019, we're still wrapping up the year, but, it looks like we're going to see close to a 5% increase in pork production. So the U.S. pork industry is really ramped up to increase production this year. And despite that, we've actually seen higher prices, which is really a testament to the strength of pork demand, both domestically and internationally. Now, all of that said, the impacts of ASF, I think, are just beginning to really show up in U.S. pork markets. And it will be a combination of direct and indirect impacts. Indirectly, all protein markets are going to be impacted, and we'll talk about that a little bit in terms of global markets. But more directly, in the last 4 or 5 months, we've begun to see a significant jump in U.S. pork exports, specifically to China. And again, we'll go into more detail on the situation in China, but the bottom line is we're really starting to see those increased exports. They're going to help support prices. We are in a growing production scenario, and we're projecting even more growth in 2020. So there will be a lot of impacts in the pork market as a result of ASF, as well as other market factors.
Well, and I think I do want to skip ahead a little bit and talk about China, because, you mentioned that ASF isn't really affecting, we haven't seen it in the U.S. yet. It's starting to affect a little bit, but we haven't physically seen the virus in the U.S. yet. What's going on in China?
You bet. China is a very important factor. ASF is not a particularly new disease. I can't give you the exact history, but it's been around for some time and has had some impacts in the past. but nothing like this until it arrived in China. And the first official reports of ASF in China occurred in about August of 2018. So we're about, not quite 18 months into this thing. But the thing you have to keep in mind is that China historically has about half of the world's hogs, by far the biggest pork producing and consuming country in the world. The latest estimates that I've seen are that because of this disease, which is now spread completely across China, I believe it's in every province, has taken their swine inventory from somewhere in the neighborhood of 440 million hogs about a year ago to down around 200 million at this point in time. So we've lost somewhere between 20 and 30% of the world's hogs to this disease in the last 12 to 15 months.
So China's market, obviously they're producing a lot for their own market because you noted that they're one of the highest consumers of pork, but were they exporting to any other markets?
Not really. I mean, maybe some minor exports kind of around the borders, but no, China is a huge consumer. It's by far their most popular meat in China. So they produce these vast quantities predominantly for internal consumption.
And so you alluded that the U.S. pork demand, the demand for U.S. pork is going to increase by about 5%, or has increased by 5%. And so is that partially from China then? Are they demanding more pork from the United States?
Well, production has gone up about 5%, but as I said, production has gone up and prices have gone up. So clearly demand has been good. And that's a combination of domestic demand for things that, we're familiar with. Obviously bacon is very popular and other products as well. But now we're starting to see this demand from China. China, because of this tremendous loss of pork production, in 2019, we think that their hog numbers will begin to stabilize probably in 2020, but pork production will continue to fall in 2020 in China. So they have this tremendous deficit of protein supplies, predominantly pork, which they are trying to fill from all kinds of sources. So their imports of pork as well as poultry and beef are increasing from basically all available sources around the world.
And that's one of the other questions I was going to ask. So with this deficit per se of pork, is there a shift globally, not necessarily just in China, to other sources of protein because ASF has decimated, much of the pork industry?
Well, that's, I think that's exactly the case because, again, this loss of pork production in China creates a protein deficit on a global scale that simply cannot be filled in the short run. There is simply less meat available now and for, quite a few months ahead at a minimum. So there are all kinds of transitions taking place. China is trying to fill in for this gap with increased imports of all meats, but that in turn then has other impacts on protein consumption, protein flows in various meat markets around the world. So this one disease is much broader than just pork markets, and it's going to have a lot of impacts that are both direct in some cases in terms of flows maybe to China or other countries that are being impacted, or indirectly because of, again, all of these shifts around in protein availability in different markets around the world.
And do you have an idea in terms of other protein commodities? Are we talking poultry as being kind of the next highest, or what's sort of the order there?
Well, I think within China, obviously pork prices have increased dramatically in China. They are trying to, first of all, stop the impacts of the disease, but in some cases where it's already been, they're trying to repopulate with hogs. They're finding that very difficult because of the nature of this disease. It's very difficult to get the level of sanitation and disinfecting that you need in order to be able to do that. So they're doing a little bit of that, but that's really a ways down the road. It appears that they're turning first and foremost to poultry production domestically in China to try to ramp up poultry production as much as they can. But poultry is probably the next meat of choice in terms of overall consumption level in China. So they are beginning to import more poultry products. And then with respect to beef, that's a fairly small market. Historically, China has not imported much beef. Now, they've always consumed a fair amount, at least in total, not on a per capita basis. But they have been increasing their imports of beef anyway, and this will add even additional strength to that demand for China to import beef from, again, multiple markets around the world.
Right. And so would that eventually affect their U.S. meat markets, I guess, in terms of beef, poultry, and other protein sources?
Again, you know, there will be a variety of both direct and indirect impacts. Most of them have sort of been indirect and relatively low level. It's kind of hard to sort them out at this point. Of course, obviously, the other backdrop here that's behind specifically trade between the U.S. and China is the trade wars and all the tariff situations. And so, you know, that changes kind of the order in which China turns to other markets. But we're beginning to see that. As I said, the export data shows that really it started in May, but, you know, on a month-to-month basis, exports of U.S. pork to China have increased. In May, they doubled again on a year-over-year comparison of the months in June. And then since then, we've been running 200 to 400% more per month through, you know, July, August, September, and October.
Wow.
So in total, we're exporting, you know, more than double the amount of pork to China this year than we did this through the first 10 months of last year at this point in time.
That's incredible. And so we've talked a lot about China and the U.S., but is ASF affecting, you know, other markets globally? I think I've heard some stories on the radio about other countries, you know, pork production being completely decimated by this disease. But what are some of the other effects globally on the pork market?
Absolutely. You know, again, when this disease really began to sweep across Asia, and as I mentioned, it's been in Central and Eastern Europe for a number of years. They're dealing with it. I don't think it's actually caused major problems for the commercial pork industry. Some of that's located in wild pig populations, but obviously a big source of concern for them. But within Asia, besides China, which again is half of the world's pork market, many of the neighboring countries. So the Koreas have been impacted, both North and South Korea. Vietnam has actually had tremendous impacts, even though it's a very small market. The Philippines. So there are a number of other markets that have been impacted or are being impacted with this disease as well.
And I guess with this sort of rise of this disease, is pork going to become such like a precious commodity that people could get priced out of buying pork products because it's so hard to find pork that hasn't been affected by this disease?
Well, there will be impacts on a global scale. And you know, obviously the way markets work in general is that we ration supplies through higher prices. You know, one of the basic functions of markets is to make sure we don't run out of stuff. And the way we do that is we price it up to the point where some people decide that they just simply can't afford it. And so we make a limited supply go farther. I think in the case of this particular disease within China, I think the bottom line is that even though prices have gone up a lot and they're importing from all kinds of protein from other sources, the bottom line is there's simply less meat available in China. So they probably won't be able to completely fill the deficit at any price level. So there will be less pork. Typically in markets, when there's less dramatic of a shock than this, then we might see somewhat higher prices. And we are certainly seeing some support for protein markets on a global scale. Not in many cases, probably not at a level that you can really detect it. It's kind of a rising tide here that's raising the general level, supporting protein markets, but not the kind of spikes that you're going to see in those countries directly affected,
right,
like
and
China.
I guess one of my questions too is you mentioned that a lot of pork manufacturers in the United States are doing a lot to try and prevent ASF from taking hold in the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are the measures that they have to go to the are those affecting pork prices in the U.S. as well, since they have to do more to prevent the disease from taking hold?
Well, I think most of what we're doing in the U.S. is really trying to control it at the border situation. And really the biggest threat, and I'm not a veterinarian or a disease specialist, but, you know, my understanding is that probably the biggest threat actually would be from people traffic bringing in pork products or products that, have been contaminated, if you will, with this virus. It's a fairly durable virus, so it's fairly long-lived. And so that's probably the biggest threat. We do import a lot of feed ingredients for the industry, and that's another source that we have to watch. So it's probably having some impact. Certainly on an individual level, farms are encouraged and for the most part are enhancing biosecurity measures and so on to try to prevent it in the first place, or at least be prepared if it does happen that we could isolate it and hopefully contain it as quickly and minimally as possible.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to talk in a minute about, you know, the effects on grain and feed trade and sales in the U.S. But I'm curious, you mentioned that the U.S. is helping to make up with some of the pork deficit. Are there other countries that are major contributors or major producers, for a better term, of pork that are helping keep up with demand?
Oh, absolutely. The EU is collectively a large pork exporter in the world. And so, and again, because of this trade is still happening in an economic environment. So because of the tariff situation with the U.S., China has actually turned to some other markets like that more quickly, simply because of the way the price levels work out when you add the tariff impacts. But the bottom line is, again, the need is so great, and at some level, it's worth it even with the tariff situation to turn to the U.S. And so we are beginning to see those. It's been a little slower to develop. I think from a U.S. perspective, the U.S. pork industry perspective, it's been slower for these impacts to kick in. I think there was a lot of anticipation early in 2019 that we would start to see these impacts, trade war or no trade war. And we didn't get there until the middle of the year and really kick in towards the end of the year. But it's there. It is going to get there, and it certainly will be important as we go into 2020 with the additional pork production that we're anticipating in the U.S., then that export demand is going to be a key to helping move more of that product offshore and help support the pork industry and pork prices in the U.S.
Yeah, and one of the questions I had that kind of goes along with that, so we're going to ramp up pork production in the U.S. What are some of the economic effects that ASF and its sort of cascading effects might have on small pig farmers versus maybe large pig corporations?
Well, I think the overall market impacts that we're talking about here probably work pretty much the same across the board. There are some differences. Obviously, some companies are going to be more directly involved perhaps in exports, but the overall support that this situation creates, again, on a global protein scale, is going to support all markets. And so, most everybody will see some impact from this, generally supportive of protein markets. Now, again, specific companies may be more directly involved in some of the trade, that sort of thing. And again, all of this assumes that we don't get ASF in the U.S. Now, if it happens here, then the technical details, the production details of dealing with the disease and so on might have different implications for large producers and small producers. But right now, it's more of a general market impact, and it's really supportive across the board for everyone.
And I want to switch gears a little bit to sort of the other cascading effects of ASF in the U.S. and internationally. So you mentioned earlier that it can be kind of carried on grain or feed used to grow the pigs, and then it would thus infect the pigs. Has ASF affected U.S. and international grain, feed, trade, and sales?
Well, I think the ASF impacts are pretty minimal at this point. Now there's an implication here. If China has lost 50 or more percent of their hogs, you would assume that's a large reduction in demand for feed in China. Certainly some reduction is expected. But again, part of that is being offset by increased pork production, poultry production, and other, other types of production. So the impacts on the feed side are not, certainly not proportional exactly to the loss of hogs to this disease. So there have been some impacts. Now, again, from a U.S. perspective, I think all of those impacts that you would relate directly to ASF are probably, masked at this point by the broader trade issues that we have with China right now. So we're really probably not seeing that directly in the U.S., but it is occurring in some to some extent in other markets around the world.
So it seems like really the impact consumer-wise is really being faced in Asia, primarily China, because they consume a lot of pork, produce a lot of pork, and their production has been greatly diminished by this disease. But really the effects are starting to trickle into other markets in terms of their ability to supply this deficit that is growing in Asia.
That's absolutely correct. Again, directly in pork markets, from a U.S. perspective, as these exports to China grow in late 2019, and we expect them to continue through 2020, even though pork production continues to increase in the U.S., we're looking at modestly higher prices for pork. And depending on exactly the specific products that go to China, one of the things that's been happening with regard to exports of pork to China is that rather than being further processed or further fabricated in the U.S. into more specific products, much of the exports to China are basically carcass-level exports.
Really? They're
taking a pig carcass or a half and basically cutting it into three large pieces, boxing those so they can freeze them and ship them to China where they are further processed in country in China. What that means is that we're sending a little bit different mix of products in the export markets now than we might normally be doing relative to a particular volume. So the upshot of all that is if the trade with China continues as we expect it to next year, even with increased production in the U.S., we're probably talking about higher bacon prices for U.S. consumers.
Well, that's interesting. So is that shift in how the pork is sold? Is that do you have an idea as to why they are shifting to more of a whole carcass type of sale?
I think it just has to do with the fact that, first of all, they eat so much pork in China, so all products are popular there. So a lot of times meat export markets get quite specific to certain cuts or certain qualities and so on. But in this case, again, their consumption, they have markets for all cuts. And so the economics for them, it makes sense for them to just import less processed or less fabricated products, I will say, and then do the additional fabrication there. Probably there's some labor advantages for them to do that. And again, they've got plenty of markets, so they're not worried about getting a specific type of product or a specific mix of products. They just need total pork tonnage to make up this deficit. So that's a little bit different thing when we look at the way this pork is being
exported. Interesting. Well, I have to say, I'm glad I cleaned out my freezer a little bit because I can make more room to get some bacon.
You might want to take advantage. We've enjoyed very cheap prices for the most part as consumers here for pork products. That could change because this thing really is a game changer, I think, again, for pork markets globally, certainly for pork markets in China, and pork production in China will probably never be the same again because that's an industry that's evolving from a small scale, lower level of technology kind of an industry. And what comes out of this when it's all said and done will probably be a much more modernized industry in many cases. But we're talking about a long period of time for that recovery to take place. So this has a big impact on all. And then again, it does affect other meats. It's not just pork. We haven't really seen it in U.S. trade data yet. We don't export much beef at this point in time. We never have. We don't export much poultry to China, but it looks like that's going to change. At least on the poultry side, there are certainly some indications that we're beginning to see some poultry exports to China. the data runs a couple months behind, so it'll be a little while yet before we actually confirm that in data. And then on the beef side, we're really just at a point where we're trying to develop a market in China for the type of beef that we produce in the U.S., which is a higher quality, more expensive type of product. And that's just a market that hasn't really existed to a wide extent in China, but one that now, especially with the overall protein deficit, there's a lot of opportunity to develop those markets if we can get the chance.
Well, and it sounds like at this point, is recovery really in sight for, you know, recovering from ASV? Because it seems like really it's still kind of going. We're not at a point yet where it's really under control.
That's completely correct at this point. It's not under control in China and in other places as well. So again, they're in no position really. They have tried some repopulations. Obviously, the price incentives are there. Pork is very expensive now in China. Producers that had it had to depopulate, or the pigs died because of the disease. And they're, you know, they've tried repopulation, but in many cases, I think, again, from a, you know, from a veterinary standpoint, it just hasn't worked very well. There's no vaccine in sight. My understanding, again, the nature of this particular virus is one that doesn't lend itself to the development of a vaccine easily. We probably will have one, but my understanding is it's probably years away, not just a matter even of months away, even though lots of people around the world are working on it. So this thing, we haven't necessarily seen how this thing plays out to even reach sort of a maximum of running its course and then think about recovery. I think we're talking about impacts in protein markets on a global scale, not just for 2020, but really for the next several years at a minimum.
Wow. And does this harken back? I forget exactly when in time this happened, but swine flu, for instance, have we seen anything like this before in terms of economic impact, or is this really looking to be the largest impact on the pork industry internationally?
In terms of the pork industry, I would have to say without a doubt, this is the biggest thing that has happened. You could almost make that argument. In fact, I think I'm pretty safe in making that argument, again, more broadly on all protein markets in terms of the totality of protein markets. But yes, yeah, certainly for swine, you know, if you looked at things like some of the avian influenza problems that we've had in the U.S. and other countries around the world in recent years, some of those have had pretty major impacts. But even on a relative scale, I don't think any of those would compare proportionally to what we're seeing this time in the pork industry with African swine fever.
And I want to correct myself on the swine flu thing. That was a human thing, I believe.
Well, you know, there's classical swine fever, which is a different disease. We've dealt with that for years in various places and so on. So there's a number of diseases. This one, and again, this one's not exactly a new one, but this particular outbreak is certainly something unprecedented, not only for this disease, but I think for any disease in any history that you can think about.
Well, you know, I have definitely learned a lot today, not only about the international pork industry, but really about the economic impacts that a disease like this can have. It really can cascade to a lot of other markets. Daryl, is there anything you'd like to kind of leave our listeners with?
No, I think we covered it pretty well. I think, you know, again, the thing to keep in mind is that, you know, this has got implications that go well beyond China and go well beyond pork markets. It will have an impact. It is having an impact, but will have even more impacts as we go forward on all protein markets. And, you know, I think we're sort of just becoming aware of the issues in the U.S., you know, even in the meat industry, but certainly in the broader context. But I think we're going to hear a lot more about it for many more months to come.
Well, thank you, Daryl, for your time. I really appreciate it. Again, I learned a lot today.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. And I'd like to thank our listeners. If you're interested in learning more about the Muscle Foods division, you can head over to IFT's online community, IFT Connect, and join today. If you're enjoying Food Disruptors, please let us know by leaving a review on iTunes or by connecting with IFT. You can find us at IFT on Twitter and by searching the Institute of Food Technologists on Facebook and LinkedIn. Thanks for listening to Food Disruptors. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden. Have a great day, everyone.